Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I am Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on 12/3/2013. To discuss the activity in the stock market, which is a little sketchy.
Yeah, it has been. You know what? We have a new name, by the way. The show has a new name.
What is it?
We're the Bitcoin Kings.
Yeah, right.
We got finally
give us Bitcoins.
People gave us Bitcoins already.
Yeah, how much total? What was the total amount in terms of income?
You want me to round it? Or you want me to give you the exact? Because, I mean, let me count it up here. If you add that and you add that, $8.
It's two more dollars than I expected.
But we got the Bitcoin on the website now. We got the whole thing started. I went into the detail to figure out what's going on with this whole thing, how to get the account set up, how to get the approval from this one, the approval from that one, all the security stuff. And then we had to get the embed codes and then go back and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story short, it is now available on the DH Unplugged website for all you people that feel compelled that bought Bitcoins at so much of a lower price and say, you know what, I can give the gift of love to John and Andrew. It's there for you. How's that?
Yeah. Well, people have been, you know, yelling and moaning and groaning about, well, you guys need to do Bitcoins or something, Bitcoins. So this will be a good experiment to see if these guys are, you know, we'll get nothing. We get that, I think, $8 will probably peak.
You think we're peeking out here, huh? Well, yeah. The good news is that there's a chance that by next week, Bitcoin could double. Listen, Bitcoin hit.
It'd be $16. Woo! Well,
it's a big return. So here's the deal. So Bitcoin goes to about $12.50 on Saturday or so, maybe even a little higher, right? Sunday, it's at $8.50. And then back up to about $10.50, $10.60 right about now. The interesting thing is that the whole concept of this as a currency is just absolutely ludicrous. You know, think about you as a vendor. You sell a product, you get the Bitcoin, and you have to make a decision, right? What are you going to do? Now you have to make a secondary decision. What do you do with the currency? Because it can go up. Let's say you sold something for $1,000. Let's say you sold something that's worth one Bitcoin. And let's say it's worth a little over $1,000.
Okay.
So now you sold this product that's worth this money. You got the money in. Now what are you going to do? Well, you're going to probably have to cash this thing out if you want to just lock in your money. But you have a lot of transactions going on, all that, and then you got to do what? Now you got to start worrying about it's like paying me in stock certificates. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, it is. It's dumb, actually.
Yeah. So, anyway, we'll see what happens with this. There's been a lot of talk about the Bitcoin lately, and I just think it's fascinating from the perspective of looking at this from the speculative side of things and how these kind of things get going. And I don't know if you read the article, but there's a massive Bitcoin operation going on in Hong Kong. It's so tremendous, this particular computer system that they're using that needs a special – it's like a gel coolant for their computer systems.
Is a mining operation?
Yep.
Yeah.
And what I also found interesting is that it seems that mining on a solo basis is totally like – you can't even do this anymore because the process of finding these blocks – is so popular and the difficulty of finding blocks so high that it could easily take 3 years to generate any coins. 3 years. And yeah. So you can set up this machine to run algorithms endlessly. The energy cost and equipment depreciation will probably cost you more than the actual Bitcoins that you get.
Yeah, we missed a window of opportunity for mining Bitcoins.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, at first it was easy, right? People can get it and all that. Now it's this whole major process. I mean, it is – I see – every time I think about this, I think of the Wild West in California when the, you know, the gold rush was at full swing. The difference is no bars and stuff, you know, and prostitution. Well, I guess there is.
No, there might be. Supposedly you can use Bitcoins for hookers.
Is there a Bitcoin conference that all these people that sit around and just watch their computers ring up?
No, but I think you've come up with a money-making idea.
Ah, there you go. This is it. The Bitcoin boys do a conference. Yep. All right. That will be next Friday at the Caesars Palace in Las Vegas.
Macau would be a better venue.
That'd be great. Anyway, let me tell you some things that are going on that are pretty, I think, pretty interesting. So – in China, there's been a ban on IPOs. And this is back in some time ago where there was this – you remember when there was all this concern over these fake companies on the Chinese exchange, particularly in technology and the smaller companies? Remember that whole thing?
Yeah.
So all this went on and a couple of companies were you know, were outed that they were a fraud and went out of business. There's another one right now. The symbol is I think that's the symbol FU, which I love.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I love that one. The symbol is FU, and it's been halted. Now, Jim, Jim motorcycle guy, Jim, you know, Jim Rogers, Jim Rogers.
Right.
I think that was the one that he was, liking. Anyway, so somehow this has been halted for like the last 3 or 4 days. Okay. Now, fast forward to November 30th. China comes out with an announcement that 50 companies will be ready to IPO by the end of January. Freaks out the small cap exchange in China. It fell by a record in one day, 8.5%, because all of a sudden there's going to be this flood of IPOs that come on the market that everybody's all excited about getting. So this whole move of 100 small cap companies tumbling, I mean, just dramatically, because there's so much speculative interest in the markets. They want to get the money out, hold it, and then shove it into these IPOs that when they come out. Pretty wild.
Yeah, it is pretty wild, especially if these things are fake. Makes it even wilder, potentially.
Right. So a couple of things that are going on. In the crazy world of smart appliances, you know, you got the smart watch. Have you seen this this Pebble?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So,
I need
by the way, FU is selling right now at 307.
It's halted.
Oh, well,
it hasn't traded in days.
Ah, okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's like I think the bid is like 90 cents or something like that, but it's halted. Well, it seems that Sony, seriously now, is in the process of final development of a smart wig. I'm serious.
What does it do? Light up? Does it stand up on cue? Stands up. Ooh, I'm excited.
It seems to be able to help its wearer. It's like, you know, the Google Glasses concept, you know, where you put glasses on, which makes a lot of sense that you just look through something and you see it. This is going to help people navigate roads, check blood pressure, and put maybe – I can't even – I mean, this doesn't make any sense. Does this make sense to you? I mean, who's going to wear this? If you have hair, are you going to wear this?
No.
Well, I mean, I don't get it.
You can have a hat. Maybe they have a smart hat for you.
A smart
guys.
Hat. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Now that's good. So you have hats and you have wigs. I'm thinking smart mustache possibly next.
Yeah.
How great would that be?
Yeah, that'd be great.
You have handlebars and you can use those as like mouse controls.
Well, you could also make it so it vibrates. You know, think of the possibilities.
Oh, how crazy things are getting here. But there is some serious things. GE is now seemingly very interested in 3D printing. Because they have been, you know, looking, you know, they do a lot of work in jet engines and all sorts of different things in the production of all sorts of transportation devices, et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, they're finding that they make 85,000 fuel nozzles for its LEAP jet engine and they come from about 20 different parts to make this thing. So they're looking into and been working on creating a 3D nozzle from a variety of successive layers of materials, and it can be very efficient to do, and they could save a tremendous amount of money and have it available for replacement very easily. So now we're getting much more from the concept of, I don't know, doorknob or little plastic figurine from individuals from 3D printing, which was a novelty concept.
Yeah.
How long does it take to make like a little figurine? You know?
The little figurines I've seen, I saw one at one of the Google conferences. They had a bunch of these printers making the little Android thing. And it takes about a half hour maybe on slow printer. I think it's even faster on some of the newer ones.
And what do you just sit there and watch it and be just amazed how it works?
It just spits, you know, goop onto the – just makes the thing. It's just weird, yeah.
Is it like a spindle that sticks up something for it to start out on? And
I never saw the beginning of one of these things. I don't know. It's an interesting device, though, I have to say.
Yeah, so you got to take a look at these companies like 3D, Triple D, and Stratasys. There's XO1. But the two of the major ones are Stratasys and 3D. And those things really could have some significant upside if this becomes much more commonplace, I think, in the commercial side of things.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pretty
situation. I think this is probably the real use for these things is what General Electric is thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that auto parts for older models.
Oh, yeah, for an old Model T.
Yeah, how great is that?
Once you get – you have to have the original part. You get a 3D scanner. Mm-hmm. You scan the part in, and then you see if it's appropriate to make a if the printer can print it. And then you can sell just the plans. You sell the code to
right.
people that have their own printers. They have – like Jay Leno would have a couple of these printers in his three, you know, huge Quonset huts full of cars. Three warehouses, I am told.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah, he is a big collector, yeah.
Yes, and he's got a bunch of full-time mechanics constantly working on the cars. And they would have a couple of these printers, and when they had an old Duesenberg that didn't have, you know, you couldn't get the brake thing to work, you just put some software in and make it.
Or for that matter, it's hooked up to some kind of a downloadable situation where it just enters, you know, you do a one-shot buy of it or maybe a multiple-use buy and just goes right into your printer through some kind of internet connection.
Yeah,
and
that's an idea. Actually, Leno, with all these cars he has, he could probably go into business selling parts.
Yeah, I think that's the great idea. As a matter of fact, you can go further on that. You know, any kind of small appliance, a little coffee maker, something breaks, you know, one of the little mechanisms or something, or I mean, you just can go on and on with things that can be made from this. And the nice thing is, in a way, it's good and bad, I guess. In a way, it stops the whole problem of, you have a mouse and a little device goes bad. Well, you can, you know, get it, whereas before you have to buy a whole new mouse.
Yeah. Yeah, instead of buying a whole new, like, $5.50 mouse, you could drop a couple grand on the printer and another $6 worth of goop. Mm-hmm. And make the mouse, and it just, you know, instead of buying it for $5.50.
Yeah, I wonder something about mice, but a mouse, by the way. There's a mouse that I really like. It's this Logitech MX something or other. Great mouse. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think I have that mouse.
They don't make it anymore. What's the matter with them?
I think, don't they have something to replace it with?
Yeah, but no, it's not that one.
I don't know. I know that particular mouse you're talking about is very famous.
It's great. Great mouse. Yeah, I guess they do well and they just get rid of it. Anyway, Tesla was upgraded. I believe it was Morgan Stanley today. I think it was Morgan Stanley. And the stocks, you know, the stock took a little bit of a move by a mere 16%.
Things volatile.
Unbelievable. You know, with all the concerns there was about the fires and, you know, I think the undue concern about the fires. Now you have a valuation problem, which is different, but the undue concern, and you did see a very nice uptick in the year-over-year comparisons on most automobile manufacturers throughout the world. Did see a big uptick today when they reported Ford and GM, and I think that also helped the situation. And as crazy as it sounds, you know, I think that maybe I don't even want to say this. It's kind of creepy. But you know that bad accident that happened over the weekend?
Where?
In California. The Paul Walker?
Oh, yeah, right. He ran into whoever's driving. They were fooling around and they ran into, jumped the curb and hit one of those gas pipes, which apparently, you know, you see them sometimes, they come up above ground and they go into a meter. And I guess that's what blew up.
Yeah, I mean, so as crazy as that sounds, is, you know, that gasoline powered cars also do catch fire. Crazy.
Well, how weird is it? Anything running into a gas main would probably catch on fire. I'm not sure it was the gasoline that actually made the explosion. Whatever the case, yeah, no, cars do. I mean, Pintos used to, but yeah, you know, I don't think it's a big concern of anybody, one way or the other. I do know lithium is dangerous, and these lithium batteries are very advanced.
Mm-hmm.
So,
by the way, how weird is it that Paul Walker, star of Fast and Furious, dies in a car accident?
Yeah. Strange. Well, you should listen to the last No Agenda show. You have some thoughts on the whole thing.
But, oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I have to do that. I like that show.
You
a lot
do?
Of fun.
It's No Agenda?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would recommend people listen to go to the website, noagendashow.com, or just look it up on Google. It's very interesting.
I was at a charity event, and Joan Jett was actually the first group was Night Riders.
Yeah, I think it's Night Rangers. That group is from the 60s or 70s.
Yeah, 60s and 70s. Yep. So they started talking about MTV.
Was it Night Rider? I can't remember it. No, Night Ranger, yeah.
They started talking about MTV and how they got their start and how they were talking about the VJs back then and all that. And so I wrote Adam a note about it. And so I told him, hey, they're talking about you and all that and this whole thing. And I told him that I was waiting on Joan Jett and how weird it was that I'm at a charity event, you know, where I'm wearing a tuxedo and I'm sitting at a table having like steak and shrimp and with all these people. And Joan Jett's going to come on stage. And it's kind of weird feeling that I'm not like at a concert type of an environment. It was very strange. So
when was this?
Oh, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. So he writes me back. He goes, yeah, da, da. He goes, Joni's great. I guess he knew Joan. He knows Joan Jett or whatever, but it was kind of funny. We had a couple of chuckles about the whole thing.
He met most of those people during that era.
Yep, exactly. But it was strange. I mean, some of the talent that comes down these days to these charity events, there's been some pretty good names that appear in some very small rooms. So,
yeah, well, that's because these guys are over the hill.
Yep, has-beens. Has-beens. I mean, one day you and I are going to be doing that. You know, we'll be in front of a big audience of a charity. It could be, you know, United Way or something like that. And they're going to want to hear us talking and kind of reminiscing about the old days of podcasting.
I really doubt it.
You don't think so?
No.
Oh, I think it's possible. We're pioneers.
Yeah, I guess we are.
You know. National Retail Federation reports that sales on Thanksgiving weekend were $57.2 billion, down 3% year over year.
No, they weren't $57 billion down.
No, $57 billion, and they were down.
Yes, and they
were down. Which was down 3% right. Year over year. Don't pay much attention to these numbers. Why am I mentioning this? Because there's so many oddities about the numbers these days. First of all, you had the situation that who really knows the numbers, because we now not only have the Black Friday, but we have something Thursday. We have the Manic Monday, whatever it is. We have sales that are going on all the time. We have online that's really taken a tremendous part of the overall. So these guys, I don't even know what the point of their providing this information is. Walmart says they had one of the best Thanksgiving weekends, successful events they've ever had. Who knows what that means? They didn't give any real numbers to it. JCPenney said they had a 10% increase year over year, which I don't know what that really amounts to, because last year was horrible for them. Sears was pretty bad.
I only keep track of the shootings. I think that's
Were there any shootings?
Yeah, there was a couple of shootings and a couple of tasings that took place in some of these events, and I think a couple of people were killed.
So if there's less, do you say that was more of a successful, or if there's more, is it more of a success?
I'm going to have to study this further, because it seems as if there's two possibilities. One, because the economy's heating up and people want to go shop, mm-hmm. and so you'd have a bigger mob, a bigger throng, a more likelihood of a killing. Or the economy's slowing down, and so the throng is really hungry for a deal because they can't afford anything else, thus the killing. So it's like one of those things where you kind of post speculate on why the market went up or down. You can make it anything you want, and I've yet to figure out whether it means it's good or bad with the shootings.
Right. It's kind of like one of those weird ways of keeping score. I have a friend when he plays golf, when he loses a ball, he's one over, and when he finds a ball, he's one under. That's how he calculates his golf score.
Huh. He must shoot par.
Oh, now, here's something interesting on the retail side. Amazon, which seems that they're, you know, amazing company with continuing to build out their warehouses and their delivery centers and their fulfillment centers, is not only delivering on Sundays through the Postal Service, but now they're in development of drones to deliver customers' orders within about a 10 plus or minus mile radius of a warehouse.
Yeah, on Wednesday of this week, I do have a column in PC Magazine running critical of this bull crap. I think it's a hoax.
Well, what I think is interesting is if there is a drone, let's kind of go with this. Okay, there's a drone, and the drone is delivering a package. I don't know, whatever it has in it, and it's not that heavy because it can't really carry that much. And somehow it's being driven by something. You know, it comes and it starts getting closer to the house that it's delivering to, and it starts coming down. Right, the altitude is dropping. Why won't a few kids take some BB guns and just shoot them and get the package?
I think if this is in Alabama, people are going to be using shotguns.
Yeah.
You know, you get the package, although it'd be full of holes, but you'd also get a nice bunch of equipment that you can make your own drones out of.
Exactly. I don't see how there's going to be protection for these things.
They're no, not, not only that, large. But the real – I mean, there's a lot of jokes. I mean, this is bull crap because you can – these things are dangerous. They got, you know, blades that, as I would point out, could chop the head off a cat. You know, some curious cat goes, you know, happens to be outside and sees this thing landing, thinks it's a bird. Next thing you know, he's got no paw. And the other thing is where does the – I mean, this thing has to determine because it's not on Google Maps necessarily. I mean, that's what you would assume, it's using some mapping system to find the house. It has to determine where the porch is. And a lot of porches are enclosed or they're just hard to tell they're porches. And it just – this is a nut, this is nonsense.
Well, maybe,
I think
maybe.
It just was buffaloing CBS because CBS has turned into a bunch of gullible idiots.
Maybe. They're going to have a centralized delivery point, like a Dropbox, that it will go to. Maybe like – think about a helipad where, you know, obviously helicopters are dangerous and et cetera, but they land on some establishment, and it's safe where they land because it's, you know, clear and above everything else. Maybe there's going to be some kind of
if this thing's only going to go out to a max of 10 miles, that means it's going to be within a radius of 10 miles, which means most people will be within 10 miles, probably 5, 2, 3, 7 miles of the actual distribution center. Why don't they just drive over there and grab the package and drive home safely?
Yeah. Like Lurias. Remember Lurias?
No,
that store?
No.
That was big down here. It's one of those you had these. You had these catalog stores where you walk in and basically there's a bunch of – there's a few things maybe out
Sears
like jewelry
used
and
to
things.
Do that.
Yeah. And you order from the catalog and you wait 10 minutes and they deliver. They give it to you. I hated that place. It's like that electronics place. Brandsmart, you have that?
No.
Oh.
You're a test bed. It seems to me down there in Florida.
You buy something, then you have to go around the back to this loading. This is like a big store. Then you have to go around the back to this loading dock.
I've seen places like this.
Like right. It's some kind of a criminal activity.
Yeah, and then you got to take the piece of paper. Well, it's worse than if there's places in China where I think they've actually streamlined most of this. But I'd say a decade, 20 years ago, you go there and you go to just a shop. And first you have to figure out what you want. Then you have to go to some clerk who writes it up. And then you have to take a piece of paper that she wrote up to a cashier's cage.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what this is.
Yeah. You go to the cage and you pay them and they stamp it. And then you have to go to a third party to get the product, which is then delivered to you somehow. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Everybody's like, the prices there are great. I'm like, I don't care. I mean, it can't be that good. For me to have to wait outside and, you know, it's raining out and the whole thing. And then, you know, everybody's pulling up their cars and everybody's, you know, and there's a bunch of people just hanging out there and everybody gets crazy and, you know, and plus, of course, you know, with my podcast fame, it's very difficult to be out in public.
You don't put your picture out there.
No.
They must listen to – they hear that voice of yours. They go,
yeah, no, of course.
Oh, my God. Is that who I think it is?
Yep. Or they say delivery for Horowitz. Horowitz? Horowitz?
Yeah,
no.
What an uncommon name.
All right. Oil. I have a quiz for you. Oil had a gigantic move today. Four times the average volume, up about close to 3% and still running. And here was the reasons why. One – price advanced because the Trans Canada said that it will begin the southernmost leg of the pipeline to the Gulf Coast that could relieve a supply bottleneck. That's one. Two, OPEC is maintaining its production quotas. Three, API, which there's two different measures. One's the API, one's the DOE. API comes out on Tuesday evenings after the close of the U.S. markets, and DOE comes out at 10:30 in the morning on Wednesdays. had a gigantic drawdown, I mean enormous drawdown, in barrels of oil compared to what it was expected. 12 million barrel drop in inventory. So out of the three, this is what's being said is the moving, these are the moving issues that backed up why oil had this big move today. You have one, two, three, or none of the above, or all of the above?
Well, obviously, if it was anything that makes sense, which of course it doesn't, it would be the inventories going down and saying that there was the only reason they would go down is because there was a huge demand.
Okay.
And demand would jack up the price.
Yeah. And clearly, when you have a drop in inventory, it's just supply demand, and you have to replace that and all that. That is true. That is one of the reasons. Unfortunately, that report was at 4:30. So why did it start moving well before?
Corruption. People found out about the inventory report beforehand. It was it was leaked like an old oil tanker.
Aha. But the actual answer why it started moving, initially started moving, was because of this news item that said that TransCanada was going to be working on this southern leg of the pipeline and relieving a supply bottleneck.
Well, somebody was lying to the public.
I don't understand this. I mean, does this make any sense to you at all?
No, no, of course not.
I can't even. I mean, it's also true, by the way, they're all true. All the above are true. But this one that started the movement has me baffled. If you're relieving a supply bottleneck, I think what that means is that there'll be more supply. I mean, just simply. Yeah, right?
That's what you would assume, yes.
Mm-hmm. And if there's more supply, forgetting about the API inventories for a second, if there's more supply, therefore there's more supply. I mean, what else am I going to say, right? There's more supply, therefore there's not a problem. Unless somehow that oil, I don't even know what to say. I'm reaching here. That oil is more expensive, but that doesn't make sense either. It's cheaper. That doesn't make sense either. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's just BS. Somebody leaked the report about the inventories. That's what drove it up.
That's the only thing that I could.
Guys are doing a song and dance. They got their hi hats on. They got a cane, and they're doing a tap dance to this with this bogus story to make it sound as though they weren't cheating.
What's really interesting, though, is that this 12 million barrel drop, which is enormous compared to especially the 1.5 million barrel drop that was expected. Okay. How does 12 million barrels get by all the estimates? I mean, where is the disconnect between analysts and drillers?
How about this for an idea?
Oh, okay, yeah.
It was actually 1.2 million barrels. They left out the decimal point. And now the price of oil is going to collapse when the news comes out that they're way off.
I will go with that. I would think that makes a lot of sense, but I would bet that just because way things are, that oil will stay up anyway.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about the oil drop recently was all the commentary on the news and in print of how the drop in the price of – by the way, the timing is just unbelievable if you think about it. The low point of oil in the recent months comes when? On Thanksgiving or right before that. Why? Well, the commentary is now there's a lower price of oil, which translates to a lower price of gas. Consumers have more money to spend.
Ah, at the stores.
Amazing. And then just a day after this, you know, the weekend, as a matter of fact, Tuesday, the day after Cyber Monday, oil pops 3%. Maybe if you really want to get nutsy about this, there was a big player out there that was keeping the price of oil down. A big, big player.
Yeah, it'd have to be pretty big.
Yep, pretty big. Maybe in the located on the East Coast in between New York and North Carolina. Somewhere in that range. Now, what's, I guess, remarkable is that when oil hits 110, the same analysts and commentators talk about how a higher price doesn't really affect spending. That's true.
It's ridiculous. We might as well just stop reading all this stuff.
That's you know what? That is a really good point you make there. And I think that is something that we really could take from this. I mean, aside from the fact that you only get the real scoop here, besides that, the fact is that a lot of the a lot of the news and a lot of the media, they really distort things. And I think this is because there's a young breed of newscasters or writers, and they're just, first of all, they get suckered in. They don't have enough. Have you been watching like the Saturday and Sunday news programs? How young these people are?
Oh, no, a lot of them are just out of school.
And these people,
they just got their degree in communications from some podunk school, and now they're on TV. Yeah, and they don't know anything. It's hilarious, actually.
And these are the people that are supposedly up there giving us a seasoned news item and trying to explain all this. It's so stupid.
Yeah, well, it's because they work cheap. These people.
Is that what it is?
Really, seriously.
And then whoever's at the top and trying to maneuver the news around a certain topic is much easier for them. Is that true?
Well,
also,
they have a bunch. No, well, they're the guys who are the last holdouts of actually getting paid well, and they're supposed to keep this situation from going south, where you start losing eyeballs and customers, and people stop watching your programs, and they say, this is crazy. Who wants to watch this? This is bad information. It's not doing me any good. And so the next thing you know, these guys are going out of business. The only thing making money on these television shows is dramas that were written, could be written by somebody younger.
You watch C-SPAN, right?
Yeah.
Now, there's a reporter or an anchor, and I believe her name is it starts with initials, S-E, and her last name is Cup, C-U-P-P. Do you know that one?
Yeah, yeah. She's usually, I don't know if I've ever seen her on C-SPAN. Maybe I have, but she's normally on the Touré show on MSNBC. She's a conservative, and she's also got a pretty good following on Twitter. And I believe she's on some other, I think she shows up on Fox once in a while.
Now, what is her name actually, if you were to pronounce it?
S-E Cup.
S-E Cup. Like a C cup.
A C.
I mean, it's kind of weird, right? You never thought of this?
No, it's funny. That's good. Strange, you got me. Yeah.
Strange
C
name.
C cup.
Yeah, C cup. S-E Cup.
Yeah.
The yen was stronger by 1%. This whole thing with the yen recently, with Shinzo Abe trying to continue on with his campaign to debase the currency through further monetization of the currency, as well as widening the monetary base and doubling it in 2 years or so, which means just flooding the market with yen, bringing it down. And it's done a pretty good job, backs off every once in a while, goes back up, but still at about 102. So the yen hit like 103 and change.
It's actually it's 102 and a half. Yeah.
Right. Now it's 102 and a half. It's a 1% change since yesterday, and the Nikkei crumbles 2.5% at the open today. Hmm. This whole idea
of... It makes zero sense, of course.
Well, it makes only sense that the yen has been dictating the profitability of many of the export companies, and they have a lot of those.
Yeah. The car companies, the electronics companies, everybody.
Right.
Japan is a net exporter.
But when you get to these levels at definitely weaker than 100, so when the yen goes higher, it's weaker than the U.S. dollar. But when it goes higher and then it is over the 100 level, that's a good level of profitability. And a lot of companies in Japan have really done well with that.
Yeah, but then again, it means their money's more expensive or cheaper, actually, but it's worth less, let's say, when they're having most of their products manufactured in China. So this would benefit the car companies like Toyota, but it would not benefit the electronics companies and the camera companies and all these other guys who are just relying on China to do everything, because now they have to spend more money for the same amount of product, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And it also is contributing to a lack of spending because from outside China, Japan, which is, of course, what they want to do, because the prices of everything has just dramatically moved higher by 20-25% in the last year for any goods that they buy outside, which is the same thing you're saying, but also for the individuals.
Right, right, absolutely.
So while this is supposed to help the world by providing, a great deal of stimulus, which it may, but to an extent, it has to hit a brick wall because you have an entire economy that's no longer going to be buying outside their own parameters. And while that economy could strengthen, the fact is that it still doesn't do a lot for the world past a certain point. And their recent economic numbers, which you can clearly distinctly follow the yen value to everything that happens there, it has been really not so great lately, with the fact that profitability of companies as well as inflation rates, et cetera, which is interesting because you would think that the inflation rate should be really spiking pretty good there.
Wouldn't you say that that same logic would apply to us?
Yeah.
No inflation rate. The reason for there's no inflation rate that's showing up in these things because we're in the middle of a massive, depression, as far as I'm concerned. And the only thing keep propping things up is the inflation of that, which doesn't exist. We should be, things should be going way down in price if it's a true depression, which I believe it might be.
And that's what many people are saying. That's why pricing of commodities, supposedly ex gold, I guess right now, are really dropping. I mean, look at the price of food goods and gold and silver and oil to a point, but just recently moved up. But I agree with you, and I think the most interesting takeaway from all of this is that the massive amount of money that's been put into the system by the central banks, which doesn't seem to be stopping anytime soon, you have to wonder when that could really halt. Once you get the whole system working on the fact that there's all this bogus money generation that's really coming in to help things out, how do you get out of that?
A collapse is the only way I can think of.
But if it's a collapse, they're just going to – there's a
series. Yeah, but it's not a collapse today. That's the key. I mean, I think that just on a kind of a meta look at this, and we've had this situation in history before over and over again, actually. It seems to me that you pushed the collapse off as far as you can, thinking that you can figure this out enough that you won't have a collapse. Figure some way out. Tapering is one concept, or just maybe saying that you're putting money into the economy and not doing it, that might be another one. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea, and I don't think anybody else knows either, but I'm sure they're thinking about it. And so it might not end up in a collapse, but it's probably will.
Well, there's an old show. I started watching a series. It's called Continuum, and it's on Netflix, I think Hulu. It's a Canadian show. And the baseline on the story
sounds familiar to me. I wonder why it sounds so familiar.
The baseline of the story is this: that in the year 2077, this is a point that the economy's crumbled, the government's crumbled, and relied on the corporations to bail them out. And the corporations now run everything. Which I thought was pretty interesting, actually, the whole thesis behind that, because we always talk about how...
Isn't that the thesis behind Rollerball?
Yeah, but Rollerball was more about... Yeah, I guess. But, yeah. That was a great movie.
First one or the second one?
The first one.
Yeah, the first one was good. The second one was crap.
It was like that other one with the driving, Death Race. Death Race 2000?
Death Race 2000.
I mean, the race is all about how many people you can kill on your way.
A classic.
Yeah. So so now you have this economy that is all built on how the individual corporations, and they get bigger and bigger, of course, take over, and then they become all powerful, et cetera. But then there's other things behind this. It goes back in time and whatever. But it's kind of like that. When you look at when governments bail out corporations and financials, et cetera, and then they go through the same process that the bailed out parties go through, where they issue a lot of money and they are over their heads in terms of debt. And who's going to bail them out if they go under? Well, nobody can.
Well, this is we already seen experiments, with this, with the bankruptcy of Stockton and Vallejo in California.
Detroit,
great. That's the best example.
Yep.
And people still floating around.
Yeah, but what Detroit will do will be they'll come out of bankruptcy, they'll clean up a lot of their debts, they'll issue more bonds, people will buy the bonds, and it's a perpetual process. It's not going to change anything. It's not like a real bankruptcy.
No, it's it never would be because you have the power of taxation.
Right.
So you
and the power of bailout.
Yeah, the corporations don't have the same leverage.
Right. Which is really quite ridiculous. Although they do, some of them. The financials do. The financials have that kind of leverage.
Yeah, they do.
But not, you know.
But still not taxing is different. Right. Although they, you could say they maybe do have some power of taxation because in Cyprus, everybody just got their bank accounts 10% fee of their whatever mm-hmm. their net worth was in the bank is taken right. away from them. That's mm-hmm. kind of a tax.
Yep. But that was the government doing that because otherwise the government wasn't going to get the money they needed from the bailout from the, you know, from the European region. And by the way, I think I told you this, but oh, maybe I didn't. Greece was upgraded last week. Did I tell you that?
No, you didn't tell me that.
Yeah, they upgraded, I believe, to a C from a C double A.
Good news.
Yeah. Yep. Big week for economics here in the U.S. We will be seeing the ISM non-manufacturing number tomorrow. We saw the ISM number yesterday, and that was much stronger than anticipated, which I find very weird when you see that many of the subcomponents, and this is an ongoing situation recently, but the subcomponents, you know, the Philly Fed and the New York and the Midwest and blah, blah, all the different ones, they kind of not come out too good, but yet the overall index is at 57, which was 2 points higher than last month. Hmm. I don't know how that exactly works, but somehow the calculation worked. We're going to see the ISM non-manufacturing, which is the service index, which is a big issue because the U.S. is, they say, somewhere about 70% of consumer-related. That's where we get the GDP from. Well, the non-manufacturing and the service index, they call it, is a big part of that. You know, it's a tremendous part of that. We're going to be seeing the second revision of GDP on Thursday, and they're looking for about a 3.1% GDP number, which actually, if you think about it, it's not too bad. I mean,
I find it hard to believe.
I find it hard to believe, too. But there is some reason for that. You saw inventory builds, and you and I have talked about this, but basically inventory builds, which is a very strange situation. When you have inventory builds, it means two things. One, it's good for GDP. But on the other hand, an inventory build means that maybe people aren't buying things because they are not ordering in advance to stock their shelves. Mm-hmm. So that could be a negative in terms of consideration. And then we have the big employment number on Friday. Now, there's been some talk about some unusual numbers that we're going to potentially be seeing over the next couple of months. We already saw that the unemployment rate rose a little bit to 7.3%. And there's some talk that the unemployment rate could drop about 8.8% in the next couple of months because and drop to about 6.5 because of basically statistics. You know, we did see that there was a tremendous drop in the labor force recently, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now what you have is that there's going to be the expiration, a big expiration of the emergency unemployment benefits. And this is the unemployment benefits, the extended and now the emergency. So you have all three of those that stacked on each other. So you had, I think, what was it, 2 years?
Yeah, it seemed like an eternity. Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen when those
gravy train for the smart money.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to put on a extended emergency unemployment benefit? I don't know. But when this happens, there's going to be a lot of people that are now excluded from the workforce because they're not going to come right back into the workforce for a variety of reasons. And therefore, you're going to see a big drop in the labor participation rate. And that's going to really do some incredible wonders for the unemployment rate. It will be fictitious when it comes to the real numbers, mm-hmm. but it's going to be statistically the number.
Yeah.
So the big question is, what does the Fed do if they had a goal of, let's just say, 6.5%? That was their goal, 6.5%. And now you get to the 6.5%.
Yeah, with bogus numbers.
Yeah, so now they're going to step back and say, oh, these numbers aren't good, even though that they're...
Well, they painted themselves into a corner.
Yep.
Let's take a look at Shadow Stats and what it says.
Going to Shadow Stats.
I wonder, I haven't looked at this for at least a month. Unemployment rate. It's still climbing.
Is it? Is that, oh, yeah. Well, look at that.
It's not climbing by a lot, but it's still climbing. It has not shown any signs of following the pattern of the U6 and the U3.
Wait, one second. Which one is this now? The official U3 is the – oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the official one is the U3, which is the one that looks like it's around 7%.
That's kind of interesting. Oh, you know why? Because they didn't calibrate for the labor participation rate.
Right.
Essentially what they did. So that's a pretty amazing number, though. They're looking at what, round number 23%, 24%?
It's headed toward 24. I think it looks like it's around 23 and change. Which makes more sense if you look around the country. I mean, in some parts of the country, like around here, because of all these new startups, because the venture capitalists all got, had money burning holes in their pockets. They couldn't take it anymore. So there's a bunch of startups everywhere, and traffic is, reflecting that. It's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
But other places you go, Florida's actually looks pretty lively. I was just there. But some
parts actually one of the best states in the country in terms of the employment situation.
Yeah, but I would say go to Mississippi, Nebraska, some of these Iowa even. I think North Dakota is doing well. Washington State's probably doing okay. Portland, I don't know. It's hard to say. Nevada still stinks. So it's hard to say, but this number is an accurate number based on the kinds of numbers that we want to do comparisons with. This is like changing the way you do baseball stats. If you don't change the numbers, then you can really make a comparison to Babe Ruth. This way you can make a comparison to the Great Depression, where it was, I think, the unemployment hit 33.
And what's really interesting is, though, that nobody wants to look at this and believe this, particularly in the world of investing. They just look at the numbers that are produced and don't even ask any questions about it. And yeah, they'll bitch and moan a little bit about how the labor participation rate here and there, but they won't really go through the process of backing it out to give us a true number, because that just won't fly. We don't want to hear that. But speaking about stinks, you mentioned something stinks, right?
Yeah, Nevada.
Mm-hmm. So does a little town called Irwindale in California.
What are they up to?
Well,
it's a famous little town.
Yeah, there's a company there, a very famous company, one of the better ones that I enjoy, a company that makes a delicious condiment called sriracha.
Oh, right, yeah.
And this is a very spicy, I don't know where it's from originally, Asian.
It's a Southeast Asia condiment. Mm-hmm. I've had the real stuff from Southeast Asia, and I can assure anybody out there who buys this stuff, it's superior. This is one of the great products made in this country, along with Tabasco sauce and Crystal and hot sauce and some of these other things. This stuff is a tremendous, inexpensive product to spice up food.
Yeah.
It's very tasty.
I'm trying to look at what the name of the company here is.
It's got some crazy.
It's got like a crow or a rooster on the front.
It's got the rooster on the front.
Oh, that's the problem. I don't remember it because it's got a rooster on the front, and it's called – I don't think I can pronounce this. I definitely can't pronounce
this. It's Vietnamese or Thai. Yeah. I can't tell.
So it's a company called Hai Phong Foods. And if you listen to the owner who talks about, who likes this and who doesn't like this, he says something to the effect of, if you don't like it, I don't know what's wrong with you. And it's crazy. Everybody likes it. So too bad. But they use
that's different than being downwind of the plant, I'm sure, which probably it might actually be a nice aroma. But
no, it's not, because here's what happens. So they're grinding these red hot these jalapeno peppers.
No, they're actually serranos.
Are they serranos?
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are even worse, little babies. So they're grinding these things up during the particular season. And this not only the smell, but I guess this eye tearing
That would be a problem.
By.
I know if anybody out there likes to cook and you use hot chilies and you throw some of like a chopped up jalapeno or anything into a hot frying pan and it vaporizes a bunch of whatever this toxic chemical is, something, and you get a whiff of it. It's just horrible. Yeah, I would assume that would be bad.
Right. So there was a ban of the food being created from the aspect of the of the crushing of the peppers, it seems. And there's a lot of concern. The courts ruled that it is a nuisance, and part of the factory had to be shut down. And I guess it's probably – they'll get their crushed chili from somewhere else maybe. Somewhere else will do it, and they'll just ship it in. But I thought this was a pretty interesting story how –
it's been going on for a while out here. It's been very controversial. They're going to stop making it. You know, like that's you knew that wasn't going to happen. They just moved to Bakersfield or something and make it there.
Yeah.
They just didn't want to move. The other problem is it's one of these situations, like the Standard Oil refinery over here in Richmond. You know, when it was first built, there wasn't anything around there. And then people started building houses around the refinery to the point where it's highly populated in some parts around the refinery. And then they bitched about the refinery. The refinery was there. You move in next to a refinery and bitch about the smell, you know, you can't really – it seems that you – I'm not sure that this is a fair way to do things.
No, I mean, who was there first? I mean, it's squatters' rules.
Well, there's something to that, in my opinion, and the refinery's done quite a bit to minimize the problems you get from refineries, and I haven't smelled anything from that refinery.
Listen, people that live on the water shouldn't bitch about the cost of flood insurance.
Or the salt damage you get if you're anywhere near an ocean.
Right. It's what happens. I mean, that's what part of the deal is. Anyway, last thing on my list today before we get to the stocks is, goodness, we're back to the discussion of the $1 trillion platinum coin again ahead of the debt showdown next month. That's sure to be fun. And already they're talking about how they don't really have to list date. They have to a different date and not to worry. And somewhere around January 15th or 20th. Is kind of the time period that this is all going to, you know, come to a head again, this whole debt ceiling and debt issue and budget talks, which basically nothing's been done about, by the way.
Why would they do anything?
They've got other things to do.
Drinking is a good one.
Ah, getting ready for the holidays?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the bottom line is that we're going to be seeing some more things. I mean, right now, we just got past being able to. Now, by the way, is being able to handle 50,000 concurrent users on a website a big deal?
Not really.
That was the goal for the government site, right?
Well, that was more than that, but.
Uh-uh.
Oh, okay.
50,000 and a maximum of 800,000 per day, max. But it was like 50,000 was a big goal.
I don't know. It just seems like a botched whole thing is ridiculously screwed up.
Yeah, and they dropped Verizon and picked up they picked up Verizon. Let me think about this. Yeah, they switched providers, which I don't know if that was what was the main thing. But anyway, let's take a look at the stocks, why don't we? And by the way, just to let you know that if you like our stocks that we talk about, of course, this particular section and segment of the show is sponsored by Bitcoin.
Send us your bitcoins.
Yeah, send us a bitcoin. You know what? Only because, why not?
You know what I like to do is actually charge for this part of the show.
Oh.
I just have to find the right mechanism so we can just close it off. People want to listen to this stuff. Because I think there's valuable information in this part of the show.
Well, of course. I mean, look at the list.
This is just the game we play. This is not stock recommendations.
Right.
It's just our thoughts.
Just our thoughts and some things that can happen, and we obviously don't do this in any way to promote or to recommend, solicit, or talk about how you should buy or sell any of the securities that we talk about. John C. DeBarak, myself, or clients of Horowitz Company may own some of these stocks, and we will appropriately put that on the disclosures and notifications on the Google spreadsheet that you can get to over at DH Unplugged. You can get there right after you hit the Bitcoin button. That we could do.
Yeah, there you go.
That would somehow lock it down somehow.
So let's see what we got.
I want to start with CIFCO.
Okay.
Look at that thing.
Yeah, it just seems
monster.
Again, just the old. It was a no brainer for me. Hey, somebody in the company has gone nuts buying this thing, so get on the coattails and see what happens.
This was the reason for the major move was at the end of November on the 27th, which I guess was between last show and this show. The company came out with an earnings report. Net sales increased 12.5%, and income went to $1.81 a share compared to $1.18 a share last year. And they had a tremendous amount of increase overall. So the stock vaulted higher that day, and now that stock is up, what is it, up 42%?
43.8.
43.8, a wiener.
And, of course, the action was in September, a few months before that. Somebody, the way I see it, somebody knew what was going to happen, and they bought a bunch of the stock, you know, 2 or 3 months in advance, saw the writing on the wall, and boom, there you go.
Yep. Now, one of the things, actually, I'm going to recode something here. One of the things that I want to share with you here is last week, on the 27th, actually, I said that, hey, there's some rumors about Crocs that there's potentially in play, which may or may not be true. But I want to share with you something interesting. This is why you don't listen to rumors or scuttlebutt in the markets, because stock is down 4% right now. Now, mind you, the stock was up about 8% or 7% on the news, but it came all the way back. This is the kind of thing that goes on in markets. There is this constant undertone of rumor of that may or may not be true. It could be simply a trial balloon or just someone trying to, you know, hack around with the stock. And this happens, and it spreads very quickly through emails, through
social media.
Yeah, social media, chat rooms, all that good stuff, message boards, and it just kind of flies out. And when the stock starts moving, what happens is it gets even bigger and bigger. Stock is down about 4% since we had that discussion, which I'm not happy about, but it is what it is. So,
well, I was stunned by this pick of yours.
Well, I mean, there is.
You had actually maybe if people if you have to go back to the beginning of the show. Before we began producing the show, you made a killing on shorting Crocs, mm-hmm. Some 4 or 5 years ago. A killing. It was like at 90 or something, and you drove it down to 2.
That was all because of me. No.
Well, you spotted something, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, it was the ridiculousness of the price. I mean, everything comes back to normality eventually. You know, you get some crazy things that are just moving around but you know what? I got to tell you something. You really pinned that World Wrestling Entertainment, though. That one was good.
It's a hammerlock.
Yeah. 41%. Freeport Mac is still doing pretty well, which I find interesting, by the way. The move on some of these commodities has been really quite impressive, especially because gold has been dropping pretty well. Actually, we put a buy-in on gold the end of last week, right about where the price is now, a little bit over this. But it looks like gold is either going to do one of two things. It's either going to base out here or drop like a rock. No, you know, seriously.
Yeah, I can't imagine it dropping like a rock at this point, but it could. It'd be interesting. Yeah. I think it'd be funny because all the gold bugs that are just all in.
What do you think about the gold bugs going? Because they're all about alternative currencies and going to the other one, you know.
What, Bitcoin?
Yep. I'm not kidding. I'm not a big fan of Bitcoin,
They're just going from one bad idea to another. That's great.
They're just chasing things.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah. But generally speaking, the list is relatively positive. JGB is negative 5%. We're gonna flush all the names out at the beginning of the year, I think, right?
Yeah, we would take it.
Yeah, flush the whole list. And, you know, Twitter is flat. AGCO is down 1%. Monsanto, which you did not like that short idea, which you're so far right about. Although soybeans have gone up dramatically since we talked about this, down 3.5%. Copart up 8.5%. That was yours with some insider activity that you spotted again. Actually, let's take a look here for a second here. RCM is your pick for insider buying that went on, up 12%. Freeport, I'm not sure why you wanted that one, but it's up 21%.
It was also an insider deal.
Okay. World Wrestling, you saw the chart had some potential and you like that. Maybe some insider deal there. Copart Insider up 8%. U.S. Steel, you just like the chart in general, up 13.5%.
Yeah. I've always liked U.S. Steel.
Twitter, that was yours for
Cisco was a good one.
Yeah. What do you got for this week, sir?
Nothing.
Me neither.
Oh, good. Well, good. This thing is kind of full anyway.
Yep. I mean, the truth of the matter is that valuations are really out of whack at this point, and you kind of have this week to really see how this all plays out. I would venture to say if we see a really spectacular number on Friday, it's going to do two things. If you see a really good unemployment rate, you're going to get the retail continue to push in, but the realization that the Fed is pushing out, and we'll see how that plays out. But I do think that there is the potential that really needs to be a decent drop. I mean, right now the Dow is down. You know, it's below 16,000 again. No big deal. Did it once or twice, then popped right above. And, you know, we see about a 1% drop in the Dow and probably the same in the other two indices. But even with the drop, I mean, the markets were down, I don't know, 80 basis points, 90 basis points today at one point. And then, you know, it took only like a half hour to just drive them up. So they're only down maybe a half a percent by the end of the day. There's just so the liquidity isn't really there. Volume was pretty hot today, actually. But it's just this, it's so easy to push the market around right now. It's really quite amazing. But you have a little bit of exhaustion. We call it exhaustion when things just, you know, this is how much more can it go at this point without any further catalysts?
Yeah, it seems tired.
Very tired.
Looking at all this stuff. I mean, if I was going to do something, you know, for the game, I would think of maybe shorting Google. I think that's got some opportunity. I noticed that Sergey Brin just sold $87 million. Wouldn't that be kind of cool? You sell $87 million worth of stock and you still have billions left.
Yeah.
What do you do with that? What's the point? What are you going to put in something else? You're going to throw
barges.
Barges.
Big thing. Big upcoming transportation.
Maybe buy a few acres in Italy. I have no idea what these guys.
Exactly. But we'll see. I mean, you know, the Nikkei, when we started talking, was down 2.5%. It's only down 1.8% now, not only, but the markets have a way of seemingly all over the world, by the way, you know, catching some bids. Although Europe was pretty weak today, really weak today, amazingly weak today. But the U.S. keeps attracting money, you know, with the idea. But once this Fed shuts down, I'll tell you something right now. Once this Fed shuts down, there's going to be a whole different play going on. If this Fed shuts – when? Why, if.
They're not going to shut down.
Yeah, well, shut down some of the things they're doing. But I agree. Probably not for a while. Not for a while. Anyway, that's all I got.
All right. Well, that's all I got. So we'll talk again next Tuesday.
Okay. Looking forward to it, sir.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.